I love reading romance, even with my mom. Historical, paranormal, a good rom-com. We both like a grump, an alpha and a beard. But reading with my mom, well, it gets kinda weird. I'm reading steamy scenes, getting bothered and hot. But if mom is asking, I read it for the plot. We look for swoony scenes, those moments that delight. Communication's good and the banter's so right. So if you'd like to read along and join the group, here's a little secret, I'll let you into the loop. It's just a little show that we like to dub, Not Your Mom's Romance Book Club.
Welcome to the book club that sure is not your mom's romance book club, but it is my mom's. I'm Ellen, and joining me as always is my mom. Hi, Mom. How's it going?
Ellen, it's going so good.
It is
so good.
So tortured, if you would almost say. Today we are chatting about We Could Be So Good by Kat Sebastian. But first, Mom, what have you been reading and watching?
Well, I was on vacation this week, so I didn't really read anything else. And
everything you watched was centered around your vacation.
It was. So maybe I'll talk about it as I talk about my vacation. Do you want me to talk about my vacation?
Yeah, winter, so you're going to talk about it.
I didn't know if you had some grand question about my great expedition.
No, I don't care.
My husband and I, my husband recently purchased a new vehicle.
He purchased a midlife crisis.
I don't know. I think he's post-midlife.
Let's hope so.
He got a little BMW convertible. And so he and I took a road trip. We drove from here over to the coast, and then we drove up the coast up into Oregon, and we just spent, five days, driving up the coast up into Oregon, and then we kind of came inland and came down past Mount Shasta, and we had a lovely time. But what I tried to do is we tried to watch movies along our trip that had to do with where we were. So the first day we ate lunch at the Tides restaurant in Bodega Bay. So that night we had to watch The Birds, because that's what one does. And then we spent the night in Mendocino. And so as I'm looking up movies that take place in Mendocino, we ended up watching The Russians Are Coming, which is a delightful movie from the 1960s. And but that's filmed in Mendocino, California. And also, we watched on our trip, not that same night, but on our trip, we watched the movie Overboard with Goldie Hawn. And
why do you always explain, like, Overboard? People know Overboard.
Well, there's two of them. There's a more recent one.
Nobody cares about that one.
I'm well aware, but I want to clarify. But it did have Kurt Russell, and Kurt Russell was in his very hot days.
Yeah.
And that was also filmed in Mendocino. And we watched Goonies because we were up there in Oregon, and we just watched movies that had to do with our trip. And it was kind of a fun way to enhance our driving experience. We drove through the redwoods, which are just beautiful up there. It was a fantastic trip. We had a great time, and we had the top down most of the time. I got sunburned because I had to figure out a way to cover up everything. Yeah. So I had to buy a visor at one point in time, because I didn't want to wear a hat because it destroys my hair. It's a vain thing. My husband kept saying, just put on a ball cap. And I'm like, no, then I'm going to have hat hair the rest of the night. Anyway, we had a delightful trip. And that's what I was watching, was movies that went along with our journey.
So in terms of things I watched, my students were doing like testing this week for like the... It's basically like our school's equivalent of the state testing. So we were supposed to keep it like light on the academic front. So I did watch a lot of like, because they would finish and we weren't allowed to go out for recess because there were still other classes doing testing. So we stayed in and they kept arguing about like what cartoons they wanted to watch. And so I would just decide. And so I'm like, you guys are watching 90s cartoons and you're going to like it. And because I'm picking so that you guys stop arguing about it. So I watched like Double Dare and Legends of the Hidden Temple and Hey Arnold and Dexter's Laboratory. And I was living my 90s kid fantasy. So I did a lot of that. But then, really, it will come as no surprise to you guys, but...
What did you spend your week doing, Ellen?
My week was spent, I mean, first of all, just in the lead up, watching a lot of, like, lead up predictions and discourses on what to expect from the Tortured Poets Department. And then after that, it was spent listening to the Tortured Poets Department on repeat and watching then discourses about...
Wait. Who did this album?
So, if you've been living under a freaking rock, Taylor Swift has a new album called The Tortured Poets Department. And, like, the ultimate gag is that everybody was like, oh, like, this is, you know, she just ended a 6-year relationship. This is totally going to be about how destroyed she is after Joe Alwyn. Who she dated for 6 years. But come to find out, like, basically the entire album, with the exception of, like, maybe a few songs, is about freaking Maddie Healy, who she dated for a fortnight, as song kind of alludes to. But, and everybody's like, why is she writing, like, an entire 31-song album? Because it was a surprise double album, because she's a mad woman. So 31-song album about this guy that she dated for 2 weeks. But if you listen to the album, basically, like, her and him have had this, like, on-again, off-again thing since, like, 2014. We know that they had, like, a fling in 2014 as well. Or 2015, somewhere in there. And so... the album alludes to him kind of keeping her on a string all for, like, the past decade. And then when things started kind of circling the drain with Joe Alwyn, basically she's feeling trapped in this relationship and not sure how to get out because she's devoted 6 years to this guy and she doesn't just want to, like, cut and run because she's, like, feel like I need to stick this out as long as I can. But then I think along comes Maddie Healy and he's like, but girl, I love you. Like, we are destined to be together and all this, like,
Maddie.
I want to, you know, like, basically it sounds like he love bombed her. He made all these promises to her and she's like, okay, screw it. I'm gonna freaking leave Joe and go be with this guy that I've been thirsting for a decade. And she did. And then he just kind of was like, psych.
I'm out.
Bye. And she writes a very... First of all, the album is very horny.
Yes.
Because she's thirsting for him. So there's a lot of horny songs in there. There's a lot of songs in there where she's like, screw it. I want to be with this guy. I don't care that he is a shitlord and a troll. And because she was getting a lot of flack at the time when it was announced that she was dating him because he is kind of an agent of chaos. And I think that's kind of his shtick. So I'm not making excuses for him. But I think that's kind of part of his shtick. And also... she talks about in the songs, like, I was ready to freaking take on all of your sins and just, and stand by you despite you being kind of an asshole sometimes and saying stupid things. And she has a song where she's like, everybody needs to mind their own business. I'm allowed to do what I want. Don't put me on a pedestal. I can do whatever I want. And, but then she has another song where she is... like, there's a song called I Can Fix Him, No Really I Can. And she's like, I can fix this guy. Like, everybody else hasn't been able to, but he loves me and I love him and I'll fix him. And then the song ends with, whoa, maybe I can't.
Never mind.
Really, it is like, first of all, it is her angriest album. It is her funniest album. It is... her horniest album. It is her longest album. And there's a lot of reviews that are like, it's too long. It should have been edited. It's like, then it's not for you. Like, I want 31 Taylor Swift songs. If you don't want that, then it's not for you.
Well,
like,
don't listen to the whole album. Yeah. I mean,
it's like, sorry. I don't
there know. Are a couple Travis songs.
There's a couple Travis songs. Okay, so.
Welcome to Taylor Talk. Ellen, tell us more.
So, I am of the opinion, if you want to know, that But Daddy, I Love Him, I think the third verse is about, the third chorus is about Travis. I think that The Alchemy is about Travis, which is the last song on the initial first album. Well, it's not the last song. There's another song after it, but it's not really about, like, love. And then there is a song, if you just want to feel, like, summer happy vibes, and, like...
And, like, a, whoa, Taylor, get it, girl.
Teen girl, like, oh my gosh, it's so wonderful. So High School is... Oh, I love it so much. If anybody wants a line-by-line analysis of why it is about Travis and Taylor, can provide, and have happily done it for my parents against their will, like, three times
like
now.
More than we cared for?
Whatever.
You know, we want to support you in what you
in my
enjoy.
Interests. I love that song. I will die on the hill for that song. It is the best. And it's, like, even evoking, like, 2000s teen movie soundtrack songs, which is, like, so my jam. It's ridiculous. I love it. So, yeah, she snuck in a few Travis songs. There's a lot of very sad songs in there and a lot of, like, lines that are just complete and utter freaking gut punches. Yeah. Where she's just like, I gave you all this youth for free. Ugh! Like, that is a killer line. That one's about Joe.
The one about, you know, I'm going to smile through it. And
yeah, yeah. There's a song called I Can Do It with a Broken Heart, which is, like, a very happy, peppy song, but it is sad. It's basically, like, I'm heartbroken, but I'm going to freaking do this Eras tour.
But I've got to get out on the stage and do this stuff.
And it made me really happy that I saw the Eras tour, like, when she was with Travis, so that I was not subjecting her personally to putting on a brave face to perform. If anybody's interested, my favorite songs are, I like Fortnite a lot, which is the one that she has the music video for. Down Bad, definitely. But Daddy, I Love Him, definitely. Guilty as Sin, because I'm here for the horny songs.
that would be it.
Who's Afraid of Little Old Me? I love that. I love LOML, but it's not one that's a very happy one to listen to. I like I Can Do It with a Broken Heart, which is her. Same with the Smallest Man Who Ever Lived is another, like, angry gut punch song. I love The Alchemy because it's about Travis. Don't come at me. The Black Dog is really good, and it's a really, that's another gut punch because it's, like, it's called The Black Dog, and everybody's been wondering what the deal is with that. But it's called The Black Dog because she talks about how, like, she still had his location turned on her phone. So she's, like, following the location on, and she can, like, see him go into this pub called The Black Dog. And so it's just her, like, imagining what he's doing in there and, like, what he's getting up to. And it's like, ooh. So that one's really good. I'm Gonna Get You Back is really good.
It'd be a shorter list if you just told us the ones you didn't care for.
So High School, I love. Thank You, Amy, which is a Kim Kardashian roast. She is insane. Those are, like, probably my favorites. There's others that, like, I respect a hell of a lot, and maybe those are ones that will grow on me, but, like, I like the peppy ones, so sue me.
I am not going to sue you, Ellen. Anyway. I know how much you have.
Yeah, exactly. So if anybody wants an analysis on any song, or they're listening to a song, they're like, what is this about? Hit me up, because I can probably tell you.
Well, while we were driving around Northern California, and my husband's like, you can listen to Taylor Swift if you want. And I'm like, Okay, you don't have to ask me twice. So I put on Taylor Swift and we're listening to it. And he kept saying, now who'd she write this song about? And I was like, I don't know. You have to ask Ellen. Ellen knows all that stuff. I know a couple big ones. Like I know, you know, All Too Well is about Jake Gyllenhaal and Dear John is about John Mayer. But, you know, I don't know what song by song who they're about.
Well, even when I was initially listening to it, I had to have, like, I have Spotify, typically. But Spotify didn't have the lyrics up, and it was killing me. And especially for the all 31 songs, like, even Genius didn't have the new songs. But I knew that Apple Music did. So I, like, signed up for a free trial of Apple Music because I was like, I need the lyrics. I need to see what the hell she's saying. Like, it's going so fast, and it's, like, these huge, like, meaty lines that I felt like were going over my head. So,
and sometimes the, you kind of need to see a lot of them with the,
punctuation
because it changes the meaning of the lyric entirely.
Yeah. She is, I will say, I mean, so like I said, horniest album and also angriest. So there's a lot of swear words in there, and my students have been, cause like, I am known at the school as, like, the resident Swiftie teacher, and I don't know. I think I've mentioned this, but I like having things about me that, like, I can share with the kids that I don't really have to tell them anything real about me. So it's, like, they know I like Taylor Swift, Star Wars, and my dog Steve, and that's, like, the three things.
The three S's. That my Swift, Star Wars, Steve.
Yeah. So that's, like, the things that my students know about me. So my students all week have been, like, you know, getting hyped with me about Taylor Swift, and they all come in on Friday morning and they're like, Miss Lloyd, can we listen to Taylor Swift? And I'm like, no, I can't play any of that album for you guys. There is, like, a clean version, which I was like, okay, that's good. I can start. If they want to listen to it, I can play that.
Some of those songs won't have a lot of...
No, I know. Well, and some of... Because they were like, can we listen to the Travis song? They were asking me, they're like, is there one about Travis Kelce? I was like, there's one that's definitely about Travis Kelce. And they're like, can we listen to that one? I'm like, no. Because it talks about, like, touching.
Yeah.
Touching her during Grand Theft Auto. And Scout's Honor. The three-finger salute. So I was like, no, probably not. Anyway, so that really has been...
I don't know that they would get any of that, but their parents might not appreciate it.
So that's been my week, really. Like, because mom and dad have been gone, so I really have just been hoarding the TV and watching leading up to Taylor and then follow up to Taylor. And listening to Taylor and Taylor lyric videos, and I've watched the music video...
Now, in the midst of all that, we did read a book, right?
Yeah, but I did have the album playing while I was reading the book.
Man, you've got a problem, my friend.
So, listen, here's my concern. I'm worried that she's, and we will soon know, but I'm worried that she's going to have, like, a new era on the Eras Tour for this album. Oh. And so I'm like, I need to know some of these songs that she might sing at the freaking Eras Tour.
That you're going to again.
Yeah. We've been over this, right? Yeah, I'm going to the Eras Tour again in Scotland. And yeah, so I need to know.
I got to know.
Anyway, I will try my best to stop talking about. There's somebody sent me a Instagram reel that was like a girl that's trying to have a conversation, and the caption says, like, when you're trying to carry on a normal be a normal human being, but all you want to think about and talk about is the torture forwards department. And I'm like, can't relate.
And it's a meme of just someone nodding and
smiling
and like, not really paying attention at all.
Yeah. That was me all last week, especially because my students were doing testing. I had an AirPod on Friday morning in my ear listening to the album while they were doing their testing, which probably is against some sort of rules that I was supposed to do, but we'll let it slide.
Don't tell anybody.
Yeah. Okay. We read a book, like Mom said. So today we are chatting about We Could Be So Good by Kat Sebastian. This is our first...
I've never read one before.
Bittersweet 16, suddenly. Today we are chatting about We Could Be So Good by Kat Sebastian. This is our first of her books, but she's a pretty prolific writing exclusively, it seems, queer books, chiefly historicals. She's known for series that include The Turners, Seducing the Sedgwicks, The Regency Imposters, and The London Highwaymen series. None of which we've read before. So this is both of our first Kat Sebastian, both on the podcast and I think in outside the podcast as well.
In real life.
In real life. So here's the back cover description for We Could Be So Good. Nick Russo has worked his way from a rough Brooklyn neighborhood to a reporting job at one of the city's biggest newspapers. But the late 1950s are a hostile time for gay men, and Nick knows that he can't let anyone into his life. He just never counted on meeting someone as impossible to say no to as Andy. Andy Fleming's newspaper tycoon father wants him to take over the family business. Andy, though, has no intention of running the paper. He's barely able to run his life. He's never paid a bill on time, routinely gets lost on the way to work, and would rather gouge out his own eyes than deal with office politics. Andy agrees to work for a year in the newsroom, knowing he'll make an ass of himself and hate every second of it. Except Nick Russo keeps rescuing Andy, showing him the ropes, tracking down his keys, freeing his tie when it gets stuck in the ancient filing cabinets. Their unlikely friendship soon sharpens into feelings they can't deny, but what feels possible in secret, this fragile, tender thing between them, seems doomed in the light of day. Now Nick and Andy have to decide if, for the first time, they're willing to fight. Mom, what did you think of We Could Be So Good by Kat Sebastian?
This book, I'm going to give it a really like to love. Is that a rating I can give? For the most part, I loved it. There's just, you know, maybe some pacing issues and some...
Yeah, I'm a light love, I think, yes. I mean, you're copying everything I was going to say, which I'm pissed off at you about.
Whatever. But it was a really sweet...
You're not even denying it because you know it's true.
It was a really sweet love story. And I loved the... time period, the setting, it's definitely a time period we don't read about very often.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I think the pacing in the beginning when they're kind of
that's
like...
That's what I was going to say.
Shut up. I hate you so much. See, you guys will notice she did not deny it.
I did not deny it.
She straight up did steal everything I was...
Whatever. Because
she was like, what do you think you're going to say? And I was like, here's what I'm going to say. And she's like... Okay. And then when I ask her, she's like, I'm going to steal everything exactly that Ellen told me she was going to say.
Don't act like you're so much better than me.
Whatever. I'm not. I'm acting like you stole what I was going to say.
Okay. All right. I'll go with that.
So the pacing was a little slow for me in the beginning. The part where they're kind of like zooming through, that, like, first year where they're working together, I get why, but I think I might have just picked up, you know, the year after they've been friends and kind of, like, allude to what has happened previously. I don't know, but then maybe some stuff would have been lost. I don't know. Also, it's the torture poets of it all where I was very distracted.
I feel bad when we complain about pacing because... So often we're trying to buzz through these books and the pacing bugs us because okay, I don't have time for this. I need to hurry and get through this book. Yeah. And so it kind of, so I feel bad.
But in that part too, there's like less dialogue and things happening. It's like, just it's just like a lot of happened. Like, and then we did this and he did that and he was seeing her at this time. And, you know, so it's not like that whole section of fast forwarding through the year. It's kind of more like vignettes that we're getting like just a glimpse at, not really like in the action of. It's just kind of like, then we went to a New Year's party and...
But I think it would have bugged you more if we...
I know.
...went through every little thing in
yeah,
that
I know. Year. It's true. Okay, what did we think of Nick as our... Oh, but I should say, I did love, like, I'm a light love. I loved it. I thought the book was really sweet and really interesting to kind of... You know, I'm not super familiar with...
Well, I told Ellen, I said, it's almost like... Because a lot of times we read books about different cultures and we like, oh, I really enjoyed learning about this culture. And I think this book is the same. It's a culture I'm not familiar with, especially during this time period. Mm-hmm. And so it was really interesting to read about how tortured these guys are during this time period. And
well, I mean, a lot of the historical context for like what was going on, I don't know, in that sphere at the time. And we'll talk about that because I have a question later about kind of the setting and how it works for us. But what did you think of Nick as our first hero?
I think Nick was more heartbreaking.
Yes.
Than Andy. Mainly, now I'm afraid to say anything that you said to me before we started.
Yeah, so maybe just don't and have your own thoughts. I don't know.
I don't have any of my own thoughts. No, I'm lying. No, I just really felt for him with his interactions with his family. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's obviously been dealing with this for his, you know, most of his adult life. And he's just had to, like, forego thinking he's ever going to have anything that brings him happiness or joy or, mm-hmm. and, you know.
She is stealing what I'm going to say, by the way.
But we never said any of this.
Yes, we did. Don't lie.
Anyway, well, then you go first.
Okay.
I'm afraid to say anything.
Yeah. I loved Nick. He definitely, like, between the two of them was the most heartbreaking for me. But I think it's because a lot of it comes from he's been dealing with this. He's, like, been in the world and been trying to figure out how to do this. How to, you know, how to do being gay in the 1950s, and has kind of resigned himself to the fact that, like, he doesn't get to be quote-unquote normal. He doesn't get to have a relationship. He has to have kind of hidden trysts in, you know, hidden corners kind of thing, and just be okay with that being the only thing he gets to do. And so I really liked kind of his journey of demanding more and like saying he and kind of discovering that there can be a world in which he can make it work. And obviously it's still not fair and it's still sick and twisted, like the things that they were having to deal with. But yeah, we'll talk more about that during the conclusion question, I guess. But I really liked his story. And, you know, I think Andy is much more naive, for lack of a better word, because Andy's approach is much more just, yeah, we love each other. Like, what more does there need to be to it? And Nick is like, I've been going through shit with this. Like, I know I was arrested for this. Like, there are serious repercussions, but kind of getting to the place where he, you know,
he lives in a lot more fear.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about Andy too much yet, but because you're going to have a question about mm-hmm. Andy. But Nick has lived in fear for a long time, and it's really weighed him down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he has a lot of trauma around it. Yeah. And
and it's made him way more cynical, too, I think. Mm-hmm. So, but seeing him emerge from that and let himself enjoy his life a little bit.
Yeah, and like you can't say he gets to love out loud because he doesn't.
He doesn't.
But he gets to find like some semblance of peace with it, which, you know, I think it was as good of an HEA as Cat Sebastian could realistically
could get at that time period.
Yeah. And I really liked just kind of how she navigated that story for him, because it was real, but it wasn't like a downer. And if you think about, you know, the book that he's reading, or like the book that he doesn't want to read, because he has this colleague at the newspaper who is always giving him queer literature of the time, and he's like, I hate that stuff. It's all just like
depressing.
All depressing, and like how, you know, they're dying on the pyre for, you know, like how they want to live their lives. And then there's this one book called The Charioteer or something, and
it's a real book.
Mm-hmm. And how it doesn't necessarily follow kind of that same. I think that's probably an important takeaway for Kat Sebastian, because she's kind of trying to do the same, where it's happy endings for gay love stories and not just, you know, doom and gloom.
Yeah.
What did you... also about Nick, he sounded hot.
Yeah, he did.
So that was also working for me. What did you think of Andy as our second hero?
Andy was... a sweet doofus, can you say?
He's just kind of like a little hot mess.
Yeah.
Like, he is like the equivalent of the kind of like bumbling rom-com heroine stereotype, where it's just like, oh, I'm spilling coffee everywhere I go, and just kind of doing that. But,
he was sweet. And it was really interesting to see, because, I mean, he's engaged to a woman at the beginning of the book. So to see him...
Bisexual king.
Yeah. And to see him have his...
Awakening
for that, part of himself, was really interesting to read about. And...
especially for that time. Because it's not like it's set in today where, you know, there's... Everybody at some point in today's society is like, am I like a little bit... everybody like considers that at some point or another, whereas with back then, I think it was,
well, and people who were like, people choose to be gay, it's like, you cannot read a book like this and think that this is something someone would choose to.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's, but it's interesting to see Andy's development in that.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see, I mean, his relationships with his fiance, I think, is really sweet. His relationship with his dad is really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
There's, he's just, and his own personal growth. I mean, he does become more self-sufficient.
Yeah, and self-assured. And
I mean, his relationship with Nick really helps him grow as a person. And,
well, and just being in a healthy relationship where, because he has, so his mother died
a couple years prior.
Was it a couple years prior?
Yeah, because.
But she had been, like, absentee for, both of his parents were, like, pretty absentee for, like, most of his childhood. So he has a lot of issues with just, like, wanting to be loved and like wanting to have somebody that like cares about him and looks out for him. And then along comes Nick, who's kind of like picking up like the trail of debris that he leaves behind him. But
Andy does sort of grow out of that.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think being in a you know, healthy relationship kind of helps him take control a little more. And I think that, and I think being in a relationship that's, you know, I don't want to say awkward, but not, you know.
Because I think he's, like, it's still going to be a thing, I'm sure, that he has to deal with, where, like, he does want that, like, love and affection. But I think in having that with Nick, he's kind of able to, okay, I don't have to, like, constantly be on the, like, offensive trying to get that. And now I can focus on making the most out of the rest other aspects in my life.
Well, and he does realize that he's kind of clingy in a way, and he, because his relationship with Nick becomes so established, he's able to kind of grow out of that.
Yeah.
And realize, okay, I need to trust the fact that he loves me and he's not going to leave me.
Yeah. And when he starts to, like, take over the paper, I think he also finds confidence in, like, making his own decisions on in that respect and stuff as well. So I did really like Andy. I think I found Nick's story more compelling, but Andy was definitely the bigger sweetheart.
Yeah. Andy had, like, pretty early on in all of this, his dad was relatively supportive, mm-hmm. and so he had that going for him, and he had money, and I think that made a big difference, because he figured, if I get in trouble, I've got ways of mm-hmm. getting out of it, mm-hmm. where Nick didn't have that kind of a... So that's where a lot of Nick's fear comes. Andy's very, just kind of breezed through life and mm-hmm. figured he'd breeze through if they got into any kind of trouble, but Nick just lived in fear of that all
the time. That being said, though, he was always, like, very afraid for Nick.
For Nick, because he was worried about Nick getting in trouble.
Yeah. But I think, I think just with things coming more easily to him throughout life, he then enters being in a gay relationship with kind of more just aplomb and just like, whatever, we'll make it work.
And I think Nick is trying to, like, no, that's not the way, you can't be like that. We've got to be careful. We've got to be, you know.
Yeah. Okay. We've alluded to this, but what did you think of the setting?
I thought it was a really interesting setting, especially for a gay romance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and like I said, it's not something, you know, I've spent a lot of time reading about or thinking about. So it was really interesting to read what these poor guys had to go through.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's just heartbreaking that, you know, that there's still some of that that goes on. And,
yeah,
I mean, it's...
I like to think we've come a long way and that people are not, you know, getting arrested and things like that. Obviously, there's still, like, shitty people who are enacting their own, what they deem... you know,
right and wrong,
vigilante justice or whatever, but they're idiots. And,
they need to calm down. Yeah. They're being too loud.
Yeah. that was Mom. That wasn't me.
That was my Taylor reference.
I said I wasn't going to bring up Taylor. But did you read the author's note?
I listened to the author's note.
Okay. She talks about how, like, she wanted to set it in this time period because, you know, people think that there wasn't, you know, that it was totally closeted and nothing was ever being talked about. Like, everything was done in, like, hushed whispers when it came to being gay at this time. But she's like, but there were books being written, there were articles and think pieces being, you know, during this time, it was actually, there was more discourse that was starting to happen. And so I thought it was interesting. You know, and she talks about, like, Some Like It Hot coming out and different things, you know, where it's not quite mainstream yet, but it's definitely, like, a thing that people are talking about a little bit more openly. So it's just on the, like, turn of things beginning and people starting more to talk about, hey, look at this situation. Isn't this kind of freaking messed up?
Yeah.
And... you know, especially in the Village and in New York at the time, like, definitely around that area as well. And so I thought that was interesting to kind of, like, be at the, like, beginning of the movement. And I cried a couple times. It could be because I was finishing this at 2:00 in the morning and I was, you know, deep in the throes of the torture poets of it all. But... But also, the two things that I cried about were, the first one was kind of Nick's realization of, because he goes and he does, I guess this is also sort of getting into the conflict a bit, but he goes and he interviews a woman who, there's like a protest happening about an emergency drill for the subway system or something like
that. It's for the nuclear, like if we had a nuclear attack.
Yeah. And this woman is just like, I don't need to do a drill. I have lit, if there's a nuclear attack, I'm at peace. Like, I say I love you to my children and my husband every night. And so, like,
kiss my husband every morning before he goes to work.
Yeah. So if something were to happen, like, that's
we're just here to feed the ducks.
That's yeah. <she's... laughs> and that's kind of like a big eye opener for Nick. 'Cause he's like, I want to live my life in a way where if nuclear,
I'm not in fear all the time.
Yeah. And if nuclear warfare were to hit us, you know, and blow us all into oblivion, I would be at peace with how I got to live my life. And like, I would be willing to be arrested for that.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause she was willing to be arrested because she didn't participate in this drill. And, I cried at that 'cause, you know, we've spent this whole book with Nick kind of
just being fearful and angry about all of it.
And, so I cried at that. And I also cried at the reveal of Andy, calling
Nick's mom
for the recipe, and Nick's mom just like, you know, you take care of him. Like, you make sure to look out for him. And,
well, we only hear, at first we only hear Nick's mom's side of the conversation, and Nick just assumes she's talking to someone from church or something, you know, some new young married lady that she's giving her the recipe, and she's saying things like, you know, take care of that man. And then he gets home and realizes
that Andy was the one who called and asked for the recipe. And so
so he realized that his mom.
So that moment, and like, even like the moment with Andy talking to his dad and kind of getting, I don't know. I just found it interesting because it's like, during the time, people are still not really ready to like call it out and like point blank, like come out to their families. But like, in both of these cases, more so, like, I think Andy and his dad have, like, more of a point-blank conversation about it. But, like, with Nick's brother and his mom, like, that moment with his mom, it's more like, you don't need to say. Like, I know.
We see what's going on.
We see what's going on. And, like, we're cool.
Yeah,
like,
just do your thing.
Yeah. And, like, obviously, it would be lovely if it was more, oh my gosh, that's wonderful. We love you for everything about you, and like, bring him over and let's just live out and proud. But like, he still couldn't do that because there was still a chance of him getting arrested for doing that. And
still a huge stigma attached to the whole
thing. And so I just kind of liked those quiet moments of like acceptance and, especially for Nick, who, like, this whole book has just been, like, living in fear about his brother. Like he saw his brother as just, like, this ticking time bomb of, like, at any moment he's going to, like, turn on me and, you know, tell the police about, like, what I'm up
and
to.
And it turns out it was the opposite.
Yeah.
He kind of had his brother's back the whole
time. So, I just really, I mean, I didn't, obviously I don't like it, but I found it interesting and, like, sweet to see just, like, how they were able to find those, and I think like, moments of normalcy. Like,
I think the fact that Nick's family is, you know, an Italian immigrant family living in the Bronx, or was that where they
Brooklyn,
were? Brooklyn, that was it. And I think that also had, you know, he comes,
I mean, they're still
Italian
people.
He comes from a very kind of macho, you know, and his brother was evidence of that, you know, just the way his brother was with his son and
with him, like he was calling him
the
slurs and all
that. And so I think that they're because of where he came from, there's also much more of a stigma.
I also thought it was interesting, like, in talking about the setting, that she included Nick kind of talking, like, also sort of, like, owning up, you know, but I like to give, what's his brother's name, Michael?
Michael, yeah, I think so.
I like to give Michael, like, grace because he came back from war, like, yeah, a changed man, and, like, came back from war and had to, like, all of a sudden take care of, you know, a family at the age of 22, and, so it's like he doesn't, it's not, like, making allowances for him, but just, like, also recognizing that, you know, there was also, like, at this time, there was a generation of men who had seen some shit, right?
Yeah.
And were...
and been through some
stuff. And were dealing with, you know, there was all sorts of trauma happening that was kind of making people fraught, I would say.
Well, because it's post-World War II, but also post-Korean War. And, you know, kind of nestled between Korean and Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And, so, you know, you got a lot of grisly old, you know, guys that have been, like you said, been through stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was a something we our country needed to work through.
Yeah.
And it's still working through.
Yeah. But I, yeah, so I just really liked the setting and I found it really interesting. And, you know, we don't get many books that are set in the 1950s period, like...
I do like the whole vibe, though, of wearing suits and ties to work every day. And, and you know, you just know the women are dressed to the nines.
Well,
you know,
like, 1950s New York, like, when the, like, I'm thinking, like, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like, she's early 60s, so yeah.
And so, like, kind of also, like, you've got the women dressed to the nines and the men in the suits, but then you've also got, like, the beatnik scene that's starting.
Well, they've got, I mean, it's very bohemian, this, the whole little group that they get together, you know, and I love it. I loved reading about all of that.
Yeah, so to get that 1950s New York at all is interesting, but then to also have, like, the context of, you know, kind of the LGBT scene as well on top of that. Was interesting. What did you think of the side characters?
I loved the side characters in this book.
Yeah, me too.
And I didn't realize it was going to be a series, and so I think they're... But, you know, everybody was so supportive of each other, even after crap they'd been through, and...
Well, and that's another thing that I found interesting is kind of, like, the hedging that they all have to do.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
it's like everybody is kind of having to, like,
no one comes out and says anything.
Yeah, like, you're just kind of having to give, like, a lot of, like, wink wink nod nod, and then it's like, does she know, like, or is she, you know, and it's just a lot of, I don't know, which I guess there, like, there's a certain amount of that that, like, still happens where it's like, would she be into me, you know, yeah. like, as a woman, or, you know, so, like, I mean, I'm sure that's just, like, a weird thing, but back then, when there was such a stigma attached to it, and then it's, like, you know, you can't ask the wrong person, or hint at the wrong person, otherwise you're...
You could get beat up or arrested.
Yeah. And, so I like how they kind of find this little coven of people.
Well, and it's like Andy's ex-fiance and her sister mm-hmm. and one of their friends who lives next door to them. And I mean, it's just this whole little, like, it touches on the artistic community. It touches on, just,
yeah,
I mean, all
yeah,
of it.
Like, if we're talking about how I was talking about the, like, pacing at the beginning, I wouldn't want to give up Emily, though.
Yeah.
Because I really liked Emily and, you know, like, can relate. Like, there's a lot... I play third wheel all the time, not because, you know, I'm into one of the members of the couple, but just, like, when they break up, like, it sucks, because...
Yeah.
I like both of them, and it's just awkward now. But how they're able to kind of all eventually come together and
still be friends. And I loved Emily having her chat with Andy about, you know,
he doesn't have anybody, so I'm coming at, he doesn't have anybody that
if you
can
break
like,
his heart, I'm going to break your knees.
Yeah, I liked that too. And I really liked Linda and how she was just kind of like, I need you to be my fake girlfriend. She's like, okay.
This should be interesting.
And Mark Bailey, who I guess the next book is going to be about.
And he's the one that worked at the newspaper who
gave.
And this was really interesting to me was Nick was afraid to hang out with the other people at the paper who he knew were gay. And he's just like, I don't want to, you know.
It's just another thing that might like point towards me.
Yeah. And to see his friendships develop with them and, you know, okay, it's okay to be friends. It's okay to be friends.
Yeah. That's another thing about the setting that I liked was, I mean, it's crazy, but like that just kind of going back to the time of print media.
Yeah.
Which
isn't even a thing anymore.
You know, and, you know, like, they're talking about how to modernize the newspaper or something. And
bring in readership.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, it's not going to last for very long. Don't work too hard at it.
The internet's going to come along and blow you all out of the water.
Which is really too bad.
It is.
Obviously. Because now we've got, like, just a shitstorm of news sources. But,
You mean Facebook isn't the best place to get your news?
Oh, my gosh. The number of times I have to tell my parents a day, like, where did you read this?
Well.
Facebook, knock it off. Dad is worse.
Dad is worse than me.
But you do come at me with Taylor Swift things.
Well, no. What I do is I come to you and I say, I read this. Is this accurate? I don't come to you and say, I read this, and so this is the way it is. I understand that Facebook is not a place to get any kind of information.
He'll like
your dad is the worst.
He'll start telling me something. I'm like, where did you see this? Like, oh, Facebook. I'm like, don't freaking
none of it's accurate.
Believe
none
anything
of it
you see on freaking Facebook.
And first of all, almost every picture that is on Facebook is fake. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost all of them are fake, especially.
Or at least, like, completely out of context. Like, I don't know.
Especially, well, because I get, my feed is just full of Travis and Taylor stuff. But
I wonder where that is.
It's because Alexa hears us talking about it all the time. But so much of that is just Photoshopped and just wrong. I mean, most of it I can pick out and just say, that's not
see, that's our algorithm is Travis and Taylor, and Dad's algorithm is, like, new stuff. So then he'll come to me and just be like, I saw this, and I'm like, no. That's not true. And if it is, it's, like, wildly out of context.
Well, and that's another thing, is there's so many quotes that people will pick out, and I'm like, okay, I literally listened to the podcast. That is not the context, or that is not what was said.
Yeah.
And
or, like, when it was said, or...
Yeah, or it was said 5 years ago or something.
Exactly.
And so just from that, because it's information about something that I know some things about, so I can see all the inaccuracies. So then it makes you realize, okay, almost anything that's on this site is wrong.
How sad that's our litmus test, is Travis and Taylor.
At least I know something about it. If it was romance books, I would know that too, but those don't pop up as often.
Those are not as big of a news as Travis and Taylor.
And that's all I got in my life. Travis and Taylor and romance books. So
that's me too. Sorry about it. But yeah, so I thought kind of it like almost made me romantic for a newspaper. And and also just kind of, it was interesting to think about, like, because essentially what he was wanting to do was kind of more of the, like, feature sections and, you know, like a more sectioned out, robust newspaper with more editorials and things like that. And like, the glossy magazine on a Sunday, which is very, like, New York Times. And that's essentially exactly how that shit went down. So he was on the cutting edge.
Yeah, he was.
But yeah, so I thought all of that was interesting. And, like, the because Nick is doing a story on police corruption, and essentially, like, it gets to a point where Andy has to tell him, like, you need to stop, because, like, you can't be pissing off cops because, you know, you're in a situation where they would, if they get pissed off at you, they could catch you doing something.
Yeah.
That they can arrest you for.
Right. I mean, they're just they would just be looking for a reason to arrest you.
Okay, let's talk about the conflict. So it wasn't, like, super contentious.
No.
And really, what it really is both of them needing to figure out their own stuff to, like, be able to come together. Because you've got Andy, who kind of needs to, like, recognize, okay, I can be self-sufficient, like we were talking about earlier. And Nick is also what we were talking about earlier with, I just need to...
Get over the fear
and just live my life in a way that is, you want to arrest me. Like, sorry.
But not in, I mean, live my life in a way quietly.
Yeah.
Is pretty much what he does, is just like, I'm just going to live it. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to find joy and peace and happiness, and the rest of you be damned.
Yeah. And so they have, like, a little contention over, because Andy finds out that Nick might potentially leave the newspaper. Because in Nick's mind, he wanted to at least entertain the idea, because he's thinking it might not be the best idea to have, you know,
Because Andy's going to become his boss, because Andy's taking over the newspaper.
Yeah. And he's like, it might not be the best idea to be in a relationship with, like, my boss, the, like, lead head of the newspaper.
Which is accurate even in a, you know, in a non-gay relationship.
Yeah, heterosexual or something. And so he at least is looking into it. And Andy just kind of freaks out and kind of takes that as, like, him leaving him abandoning him. But then Andy recognizes that thinking is more coming from his own insecurities with being left. And, so they kind of get to a place where they're both at peace with their own shit and then are able to be together.
Yeah.
And so it's a very low, it's very, like, non-contentious conflict.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, they do say some things to each other, but then it's quickly, both of them quickly are like, okay, he didn't mean
both
that.
Both of them quickly think to themselves, like, that was kind of a mess. And then when they come together, it's like, I didn't mean that. And they're like, yeah, I know you didn't. And, like, I recognize what was going on. And
yeah,
so it's,
it was really, actually really well done.
Yeah.
For a conflict.
Yes, I agree. Okay, let's talk about sex, baby. So they do have it.
They do.
And, you know, with especially Andy never before being with a man, there's a lot of kind of trying new things. And but I did like, I thought it was kind of, I thought it was cute. This sounds weird, but I did like the blowjob scene where he's like, he was kind of a mess. Like, bless his heart. But, you know, and so Nick kind of getting to...
Well, recognize that he's got a newbie on his hands.
Yeah. But there was something kind of sweet about that.
It was sweet. And Nick even said it was really sweet. Yeah. You know, his putting, like, so much effort into it.
And like, his enthusiasm. And I thought that was cute. And, and that they, like, even with more of Nick's experience, that he, like, had never been the bottom before. And so he was like, yeah, I want to, like, I want you to be, like, that is my level of showing you that I'm also willing to try new things.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think this is definitely, like, our most graphic male that we've read on the podcast. I still thought it was handled.
I thought it was handled really well. And I thought that,
like, it still felt sweet and romantic.
It did. And they were really sweet with each other. They were just a cute couple.
Yeah. And I did like, also talking about sex, I like when Andy is like, well, I don't want to, like, hold you back from, this is, like, before they are
together.
He's like, I don't want to hold you back from, like, you know, taking care of business. So, like, let's go to a bar together. He's like, really? Like, you want to do that? And, but really, it was just kind of...
Well, and Andy was starting to have feels for him.
Well, and Andy was starting to recognize, like, maybe his own queerness. And so I think part of it was, too, was he wanted to kind of see what the scene was like.
Life is like.
But then, like, when faced, like, with the realities of watching Nick be with somebody else, he was just like, nope,
let's go.
Abort.
And the whole 180 thing kind of threw Nick for a loop.
Yeah. What was your swooniest moment?
Oh, I forgot to think about a swooniest moment. I had a lot of swoons in this book. They were just really a sweet couple. You go first and let me think for a minute.
Mine is when they're kind of talking about, like, well, when did you know that you liked me? And, like, when did you know that you liked me? And Nick says, well, Andy then, like, waxes poetical about Nick's, like, the hollow in his collarbone. And I just thought there was something really sweet about that, where it's just, like, I just got hyper-fixated on, like, this one thing on you, and I was just like, that thing is, like, just teasing me, and I want it. And then Nick saying, like, because Andy's got, like, a cluster of freckles, like, off to the side of his mouth, and Nick says, it's that cluster of freckles. And then Nick, like, thinks to himself, I didn't tell him that was basically, like, from when we met.
from the first time
we met. And I don't know, it was just another just really sweet moment, and I kind of liked the idea of just, like, fixating on, I just wanted that. I wanted that one thing.
Well, I have two. There was a sickbed scene, which those are always pretty, aw.
Yeah.
And just Nick cooking for Andy all the time was really sweet. But, and we already talked about it, but him finding out that Andy had called his mom for the soup recipe and was cooking for him, which Andy had never done before, and Andy was really nervous about it, and I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a lot of really just sweet moments. And yeah, I loved them. And I also just, like, there's just something very domestic, and it's kind of like, what we were talking about with the 7-year slip.
Yeah.
Where just, like, you become, like, this apartment just becomes, like, almost a character in itself, where you're just, like, you can visualize the apartment and just you feel all nice and cozy when they're, like, together in the apartment and things like that. And
I did love, too, speaking of swoony moments, but... Nick trying to bathe the cat.
Yeah.
So that the cat could be their pet, but he wanted to get the fleas and all the crud off of it.
Yeah.
And, the whole thing with the cat was just really cute.
Yeah. I just loved, like, you know, them finding their own little domestic bliss was cute. Okay. So that's what we think. And we have a few of you who have weighed in. First, we have Anna, who sent in an audio file. So let's hear from Anna.
Hey, No Yomos, Mom and Ellen. Anna here with some thoughts about We Could Be So Good. I really liked both of our heroes, Nick and Andy, in this one. Andy's flibbertigibbetness didn't seem over the top, and Nick was a really likable grump. I thought it was interesting that there was a mini conflict kind of early-ish in the book. I'm not sure exactly when, maybe like a third of the way through, when Andy kind of propositions Nick with some sexual gratification and Nick misinterprets this. But then they remain friends and they kind of talk about how, like, oh, this isn't going to disrupt our friendship. So it was interesting how I thought the communication in this book was really good. It seemed really good, but oftentimes the characters wouldn't say things directly. They would often just kind of talk around the things that they actually wanted to say. So I thought that was a really interesting how it came off as like they were communicating well, but without actually saying things directly. And I liked how the author would kind of walk us through what the characters were thinking when they were making decisions so that when they did do something, it kind of made sense. So like when the tables turned and Nick was kind of propositioning Andy and flashing him the like the sexy eyes, and he had thought about how he might get his heart broken, but his heart was already breaking if he didn't do it, so he might as well just jump in and go for it. So I thought there was a lot of really good kind of backstory and things like that. And this was a slow burn, and which made this kind of a long book too, kind of a lot of the descriptions and things like that. But it all really worked. And I was also waiting for the shoe to drop, something bad to happen, like there being some discrimination of Nick, like him being found out. But that didn't happen. And so this made this book really low angst, which really increased my enjoyment of it. And I'm not sure if there were content warnings, but I didn't read them. So maybe I would have had a little bit better of an idea going into this, that this felt kind of cozy, kind of like the last book, Mickey Chambers Shakes It Up. It felt kind of cozy to me. But quick random side note, speaking of content warnings, I just was looking at the list of, it's like a page long for our next book, The Butcher and the Blackbird. And I literally had to look up some of the warnings because I didn't even know what they meant. So blurg, it feels like it's going to be a tough one for me. And it's one of the main reasons why I participate in this book club is for the education. So I had no idea there were so many things to learn that Mom and Ellen have talked about on the podcast. So thank you so much for all the education you've given me. I haven't read The Butcher and the Blackbird yet, and I know quite a few people have. And it kind of reminded me of the book The One by John Mars, where there's a serial killer component. It's kind of like the soulmate equation meets this Butcher and Blackbird, it seems like. So I'm interested to know if anybody else has read The One and what they thought of that. Anyway, back to We Could Be So Good. I liked the parallel of, I think it was the charioteer book that the guy that Nick worked with gave him, and how there's a happy ending. So you knew that this book would have a happy ending. And I liked that in the end, Nick wasn't completely transparent with his nephew, Sal, who maybe is gay. I think we don't really know, but it would have seemed like unrealistic, I think, had he just came out to him completely and been like, this is how, for the times, it would have seemed like that would have been unrealistic, even though I certainly wish that for them. I thought that was a really neat solution, how Andy bought the building and they were able to live together and maybe redo their house and things like that. So at the risk of this being too long, I wanted to quickly mention, when I was on the flight home from Australia, I watched the movie of Red, White, and Royal Blue. And I can't remember if Mom and Ellen had seen that, but I thought it was really cute. I thought they did a really good job of following the book, and I just really enjoyed the actors and the way they portrayed the characters. And I just wanted to do a quick shout out to that movie. I thought it was really good. I don't watch a lot of movies and TV, so it's kind of rare if I do. And if I do watch them, I don't usually like them, but I thought this worked really well. So anyways, excited to hear what everybody else thought, and thanks so much. Bye.
Thank you for that, Anna. Yes, the one thing I wanted, the Sal, I think I was also wondering, I totally agree that I think it would have been weird if, you know, because Nick essentially comes out to Sal, but I think it would have been weird if Sal was like, oh my gosh, me too. Because I think that's just, first of all, I think like, yeah, the time period, it was not a time where a kid is going to be like, yeah, totally. Like, same. Oh my gosh. But I think it was more just to kind of, like, let him know that that is a thing. And, like, that me, a loved one as Nick, like, is here if you feel like there's something you need to talk about at any juncture. And so I thought that was
a nice moment. I mean, he's obviously being bullied at school. But I also think just guys in general who have effeminate tendencies, maybe, or...
Yeah, I mean, this was a thing when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So it's like...
I mean, you get bullied, even if you're not gay. I mean...
It's a thing. I mean, like, I certainly less than, like, when I was a kid, but there's even things where I have to call the kids, my students out, where I'm like, hey, friend, like, let's maybe not,
yeah,
like, criticize him for that, you know, like, yeah, I mean, there's been moments where I've seen kids who, you know, I can tell probably might eventually someday, yeah, want to come out, and,
I had students, too, that I was like...
Yeah, and you can... And I think now, I mean, I think when I was growing up, it was just like, don't be, you know...
Yeah.
There's just slurs being thrown around, and, like, we were just being, like, completely juvenile about it. But I think now, because the kids are so aware of, you know, which I think is good, but... because they're so aware, they then, you know, are very quick to just be like, try to like almost out.
Yeah.
Out the kids, where it's like, that is a thing that they get to do in their own time, and not like, even if you're not trying to do it like vindictively, it's still not something that we're going to call attention to until that kid is ready to talk about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it still happens, you know, to a,
well, and there's
to a certain degree.
There are some people, guys, who just are a little more effeminate than other, and they might not even be gay. I mean, it's,
yeah,
just, you know, part of who they are and their personality. But, you know, everyone's got their own,
yeah,
road to travel.
For sure. So thank you for that, Anna. You had, and I was going to say, I think I'm going to put a thing on the Facebook group asking people who have read Blackbird and the Butcher to, like, maybe make a post of any possible trigger warnings, because I know that it, I've seen that it's a...
I'm just going in blind, baby. I'm just going to take it.
Interesting one. Okay, Nina says...
Oh, wait, we have not watched Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Oh, yeah, we haven't. I think it came out, like, in the midst of my
summer
of chaos,
yeah,
and...
Well, I didn't watch it right off, because I was waiting to watch it with Ellen, and then we didn't get around to watching it, and then I heard it wasn't rated very high, so I was afraid I would be disappointed, so I haven't ever watched it.
There's probably been enough time, like, where I don't remember enough about
the book.
I mean, I remember, like, the basic premise, but... yeah, we do need to watch that one. Because, yeah, I think it came out when I was actually seeing, when I was seeing Taylor last time. And then I just never got around to it because then school started back up and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Nina says, this was one of my favorite reads of 2023. I don't think I can convey how lovely this book is. This is a sweet, gentle, slow burn of a friends to lovers book about a flighty flibbertigibbet and grumpy grump who is immediately smitten with him. If you want fast-paced external conflict with high heat, this will not be for you. But if you are in the mood for a warm hug of a love story between two adults who talk to each other and work through their insecurities together, then this will be perfect for you. Very true. Well,
that's an excellent description.
Yes, with without giving really anything away, but definitely it's, and yes, you know, we have serious issue with communication, and I thought that they were great.
They were, and I think it was Anna that pointed out, without really even saying anything,
yeah,
because Andy, in all his sweetness, is kind of prudish when it comes to talking about sex and stuff, and so it's kind of funny there.
Yeah.
Some of their conversations.
Ashley says, I really liked this book and loved a more modern historical. Yeah. Nick and Andy were
I did put this down as possible award for historical.
Yeah. Nick and Andy were truly such great partners to each other. I loved how they communicated the entire book. Even the misunderstandings only lasted a short time since they actually talked about things instead of just shutting down or constantly interrupting the other. While I felt there were times the story was moving a bit slow, I also felt like every scene added to the story, so I'm not sure what I would have cut. A few slight quibbles. Having read most of Cat Sebastian in the past, I am used to the door being wide open during her sex scenes. I was surprised that the door was barely cracked in this book because this book took place in 1959 and they were only 25. I was kind of hoping that the epilogue would be Andy and Nick in more present day getting married when it became legal, since there were, I was also wondering if she was going to do this. There were a few times Andy mentioned how he wanted that with Nick, and I have so many questions about Emily and Gerald. And then I know somebody weighed in on that and said that there is a epilogue that like got posted online. So if you are interested in reading an epilogue, I don't think it's like far enough into the future where they're able to get married, but it's more details, I guess, about another epilogue. So if you're interested in that, you can check that out. But yes, I also thought it was very possible, especially because like she kept having like years on like new sections and things like that. So I was like, I wonder if the epilogue is going to be like 2000, whenever it happened, 2000. And it happened 10? It happened in so many different states at different times.
Different times.
But yeah, I was kind of wondering if it was going to show them getting married as elderly men.
Bless their hearts.
Yeah. But totally agree about the communication and how well they did with that. And, yeah. And she says, you know, about moving a bit slow. And I do feel like that a little bit, but you know,
but also what would you cut?
I know. Maida says, "Oh, this book is so romantic. It was a slow burn, but I get why it had to be that way. Swooniest moments when they were not folding the laundry." Yeah, and when Nick comes home to Andy making his mother's soup recipe. Yeah. Funniest moment was Andy hanging out with the old Italian women. Yeah, old Italian women, having spent a lot of time in Italy, they are sassy. And they have no problem. The thing that, like, everybody, like, old Italian women observation is they would come up to you, like, just strangers on the street, and they would be like, they would say male della gola, which is just like, because I wasn't wearing a scarf, like when it wouldn't even have to be that cold, it would just be like a chill in the air, like they are big on their scarves, and if you are not wearing a scarf, they're like, oh, you're gonna get sick, like male della gola, and they would be like, you need to put a scarf on. And so like they're just always berating me about putting a scarf on. To where I finally was just like, fine, ladies, jeez.
I'll get a scarf. Well, everybody calm down.
I had one, but I didn't always want to wear one unless I felt like I needed it. But Cassie says, I really enjoyed this book overall. The pacing at the beginning was a bit slow for me. Thank you. And the audiobook narrator's voice acting choices were annoying at first.
I would say I would agree with that. I didn't love his Nick voice. He was trying to do the Italian, gruff Italian thing, and it was just, I don't know, it just came off kind of cartoonish.
Okay. Yeah, Mom listened to all of it? Most of it?
Most of it. I read, during the middle of the night, I read a few chapters in the...
Cassie says, but I eventually got over them. Once Nick and Andy got together, I found their story to be moving and poignant. I teared up when Andy's father talked to him about supporting queer people in an attempt to connect with Andy, and when Andy discovered the spare bedroom that Nick had set up for his nephew Sal as a safe space. This was a really beautiful friends to lovers story in a historical era I haven't read in a romance book before. I think that I kind of might be the same.
It was close to our...
like space age ones.
Well, The Sun... what was it? Follow the Sun? Or what?
Oh, yeah. Follow the Sun.
It was close to that. But, I mean, that was more 60s. Mm-hmm. But, you know, encroaching on that same time period.
Yeah. Like-minded Laurie says, I read this last year when it first came out and loved it so much. I happily made time to re-listen this week. This is only worth mentioning because I don't usually do a lot of rereads. Cat Sebastian is just a fantastic historical romance writer. This post-McCarthy, pre-Stonewall setting was a really compelling sliver of time to tell this story. Nick and Andy were both so vividly drawn, and I was fully invested in their journey because most of this author's stories are set in time periods where same-sex relationships were illegal. There's always a bit of angst going in regarding how the characters are going to be, how they're going to believably find their HEA, but I've never been disappointed in a Cat Sebastian book. So glad this one was chosen for the podcast. I'm really looking forward to her next release, You Should Be So Lucky. It comes out in just a couple of weeks and features Mark Bailey from this book and a baseball player. Just a guess, but I'm betting we get a glimpse of or two of Nick and Andy. I think that's probably a safe bet.
Probably safe.
That sounds cute.
It does.
And yeah, I agree. And I totally agree with her comment about post-McCarthy, pre-Stonewall setting was a really compelling sliver of time to tell for this story.
Yeah.
And kind of like what we were getting at with, you know, right here on this kind of cusp of starting to make some amount of progress in that arena. Final thoughts, Mom?
No, I thought it was a sweet story. I love these two guys together. It was really cute.
Yeah, and yeah, like we've been saying, interesting too. Like just from a historical, you know, we love a good historical context. Yeah. But kind of learning more about what life was like, you know, which
that,
I know
that it, slice of life.
I know it wasn't great, but also I really just loved kind of them finding some semblance of
joy.
Yeah, and I thought that was a really sweet message. And you know, takeaway from the book. So those are our thoughts and some of your thoughts on We Could Be So Good by Cat Sebastian. We would love to hear more from you on our Facebook page, our Facebook group, which is Not Your Mom's Facebook group, our Goodreads group, our Twitter and Instagram, which are both at Not Your Mom's Rom, or you can email us at notyourmomsromancebookclub@gmail.com. So if you want to read along with us and email us with your thoughts, or if you would like to suggest a book for us to read, we'd love to hear from you. Next week on April 29th, we will be chatting about Butcher and Blackbird by Bryn Weaver. True warnings
apparently
are there. Be aware. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and wherever your favorite podcasts are sold for free. Don't forget to leave a review because it helps the show, and we just love to read them. All right. Thanks, Mom.
Welcome, Ellen.
Bye.
Bye.
Not Your Mom's Romance Book Club is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more outstanding podcasts to subscribe to at frolic.media/podcasts.